Hello and welcome to the Listening at Warwick podcast. In this episode, Stefania and Katie talk about how the pandemic changed assessment as departments rushed to find viable alternatives to traditional on-campus examinations. They confront the perils of the open book, particularly in quantitative subjects, and find that liberating students from exam halls brings its own rewards.
Oh, Catherine.
Hello. I don't think we met. I could be wrong. I'm in the business school, which is a very large department, and I don't actually know everybody who's in the business school, let alone who's in the university. So I'm a teaching, I think it was associate professor on the teaching track, I think they could call it. I've been at Warwick a long time. I think I've just got my pen for 15 years or something like that. Thank you. I've been doing it the old-fashioned way, shall we say, for quite some time. So this change to online exams has been an interesting experience.
Yeah, I'm Stefania Paredes Fuentes. I'm also an associate professor on the teaching track in economics. So I completely understand what you mean when we talk about very large departments. I do like to think that I know everybody in economics, but I don't think that's true. It's almost impossible. I have been trying to move away from traditional assessments from very long time, but having such large cohorts, like 460 students this year, we sometimes just end up doing kind of the same, and you know, the bureaucracy and things, and we just use normal exams. So I think this year was the opportunity to say, you know what, we have to change, so we might as well try to do something new.
Yes, I think it's innovation is often thrust upon you, isn't it? So it was a good opportunity. It came as a bit of a rush, obviously, to start with, because of the timing of having to go into the first quarantine. It was a bit of a rush to change everything. And generally, the business school took the sort of stance that because there was so much uncertainty, I think we sort of took what we felt was probably the safer route. And a lot of the exams turned into mini assessments, assignments, as it were, rather than online exams to start with. And I certainly changed my sort of second, third year module into a mini assessment assignment. Which obviously, you know, came as a bit of a shock to students, because obviously they sign up for a module with, you know, the assessment in mind. But so I'm not sure it was totally, what they were expecting. But unfortunately, I don't think anyone really knew what they were expecting. So probably this year has been the first time I've managed, had to come up with online exams for all my modules, especially since, of course, the first years didn't sit last year, so a lot of my staff didn't actually get into assessment in the summer anyway. So I don't know how you felt, whether you had to sort of change quickly or whether you had more time to think about it.
So actually, it was a bit the opposite for me. I have been thinking, as I mentioned, I have been thinking about trying to change assessments for a long time, but, you know, time constraints beforehand, I just kept, and also kind of as institutional constraints a little bit, we have to keep the traditional exam, so I didn't change. So when March came, and I said, as soon as March came and a pandemic came, I said, there is no way I'm going to have students sitting an exam in a lecture theater anymore. That's not happening. And so start talking about like the potential alternative that we have. And I had two exams at the moment, because first years were canceled, all the exams. So I had two modules that I had to sit exams. One was a second year and one was a third year module. So what I did is actually I wrote a guide with a colleague at the time was at Warwick, but now it's at Aston University. We wrote a guide of a no panic guide to change assessments from the traditional settings to online assessments. And so by writing that guide, a little provision of what alternative we have, and I wouldn't say that I was completely innovative last year, but something that economics and a lot of universities do was moving to these online exams. And I said, I just didn't feel that was right for the modules that I was teaching. So what I did, it was a mini assessment in which I have 24 hours. In one, the students have 24, other one students have 48 hours to answer. But this was like the typical thing. From the moment that I opened the exam, you have 24 hours to submit. It doesn't matter that if you take 2, 4, or 6, as long as you submit within the 24 hours that have been set. What I did tell the students is that the exam has been set that if you sit down from the beginning till the end and don't stop, it's going to take you 2, 3 hours, 4 at most, but it shouldn't. However, you might, because the exam will require you to think a little bit more, it's not going to ask you to kind of, you know, give me a definition. I know you have your books. I know you have all the notes. I know you have internet. It's going to ask you to use that knowledge to answer some questions. Particular for one of these two exams, I asked them to write a policy report on a specific topic on inequality. That's a thing we have been studying. So they have to use that knowledge. So say for that reason, what I want you to think about is like, you know, you write a bit, you go have some food, a cup of coffee, start thinking perhaps in the back of your mind, your essay is there. Say, you know what, I don't like it anymore, so I'm going to go back to it. Or, you know what, I have this brilliant idea now. What about if I use this data? Or what about if I do this to make my argument stronger, right? So you take your time, all the time that you think you might need to answer this, to solve this exam or whatever it is. So that's what I did. I didn't want to have like the students have the pressure to kind of deal in addition with, of course, everything that they were dealing with, pressure to have to submit something on a time constraint within 4 hours and 45 minutes and put all the things. I don't think that was fair, especially for the type of exams that I was trying to do. And so, yeah, that's what I did. I completely, like, last year in March, I just gave them 24 hours, 48 hours. It worked quite well. I didn't have many problems, students not submitting on time. And so I just took this year too. And I said, you know what, we maintain the same and you just open it whenever you feel like opening it. Just give yourself at least 2 or 3 hours. So yeah, that's what I did last year.
Yeah, that's quite cool. Yeah, it does get through, over some of the issues, because, of course, the problem with technology, it doesn't always work. So, yeah, you don't have quite the same issues, you know, with that as you do if they were all sitting in the room any issues were documented in a room like they used to be. So we had a lot of mitigating circumstances. Applications that would not have had to occur basically because of technology or the lack of it perhaps. I mean my assignment was very much more that we give them, you know, X number of weeks basically to do it, although it was made clear that it wasn't like a normal assignment where you would expect perhaps the depth and the time, that it was supposed to be a mini, you know, shorter version. But I think they gave everybody as many weeks as they could, essentially, because they were obviously going to have to juggle, you know, more than one modules assessment over that time, which of course is difficult, especially if they were going to have exams as well. This year, it was very much the case of choosing. We were given the choice between a normal exam timing, so basically a set time, I think they call it, a set timing start. So essentially if they could get it in at 9 o'clock, we have a lot of students who aren't obviously in the UK and mostly their timing is behind us, as it were. So we were trying to adapt to make sure they would be okay. So if it was able to be scheduled at 9 o'clock in the morning, you could opt for a set time. So if it was a 2-hour exam, you know, they'd have 2 hours from 9 o'clock to do it, everyone. Or you could go for the 24-hour period where they have 24 hours to open it and complete it within. I mean, both of those obviously have issues, perhaps ones we hadn't totally thought through, maybe. We did have a few technical glitches with the AEP, you know, crashing when everyone tried to get in at the same time. You know, these things, unfortunately, technology is not always as robust as you hope, although they fix them amazingly quickly, I have to say. Unfortunately, those things do throw students out of their sort of, well, you know, their concentration space, I think, which is a shame. And we did try to adapt for that in the marking. But generally speaking, I preferred a fixed time start, because I guess what you're trying to do there is basically just move what you used to have to being online. But on the other hand, it doesn't work quite like that. You can't, as you say, it's open book. You can't, you know, ask book questions. It doesn't really make sense to. So you're asking, as you say, the more context driven questions, either in an assignment type thing or in a exam type. The problem with context type questions is they tend to be longer, both from, you know, actually writing them point of view in the first place, but also in reading it from the student's point of view, in understanding it, in answering them. They tend not to be as quick as perhaps the more straightforward book type questions. So, you know, in an exam situation, you're stuck with the exam time that's on your paperwork, and therefore, do you give them less questions because you don't want them to not have enough time? So there was a lot to think about. There was a lot. It took a lot more effort to write the exams because you're coming. I have to come up with context, scenarios, stories that I can then relate the theory to. Most of what I teach is statistics and mathematical type modeling, so it's quite technical, so it's actually, yeah, so much more difficult to come up with with context driven questions. It's just more time consuming to make sure it works, basically. But on the other hand, for the first time in my life, I could ask them to do some analysis for themselves, which I could never do before because they didn't have their computers in the exam rooms. But now, you know, they're home. Hopefully the software's working and they can analyze whatever you send them. So I did, for the first time, give some data to my students and ask them to actually do something, which was nice. You know, there's much more what you want to do in those types of modules, but you've been constrained by the sort of paper-based idea of exams. So there were definite pros from that point of view. I'm not sure whether the students felt they were pros. It was obviously, you know, something they were slightly worried about as to, you know, what they might get asked to do, which, you know, you obviously try to allay their fears and give them examples and all that sort of thing. But obviously this was a step for everyone into a slightly new thing. But it did seem to work.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The quality, like the question, one thing is, because I know that the students can write quite a lot of things on these things, word limits. They all had word limits and what they could write. So they have, for the policy report, they have condensed everything to 700 words. It's tough, right? You really need to be selective in
yes,
what information you are gonna. It's a policy brief, in fact. It's not a policy report. It's a policy brief about a specific topic. And so, you know, even being selective about what information you use or something means that you have studied or not. You can't just make it up in the 48 hours. So I do think it's still, some students might try their luck and study less because, oh, I have 48 hours, I can look at the internet or something. But then you have to be very selective in how, what information you use. And for doing that, you really need to understand the theory, the concepts. Otherwise, you're going to just end up copying and pasting whatever you find. And of course, that Turnitin can catch that. But
yeah,
I can read and you can see that there is not enough depth in the answer for the students. So it's a... but yeah, no, I to be honest, I don't think I would be very keen in going back to the old exam paper, even in the future. Even, I don't know, maybe if it's not online or something, but I like the idea that students, because the quality of answers was much, much better. And not because the students could just go, but I'm pretty sure some of them, and you know, plagiarism was code when it needed to be code. But I surveyed the students afterwards, and even like I got some email from students and say, you know what, I usually do very bad at exams because I panic and just, you know, that's what happens in an exam room. But this time I panic too, but then I have the time to kind of set my, like, settle down and keep working on the exam, which usually in an exam room, you don't have that time to panic, settle down and do the exam. So I really feel like my knowledge about the, in that case was money and banking, came out much better than it would have in an exam setting, which I think it was, especially in last year, in such a difficult scenario, I felt very, very happy about it, like that at least it helps some students with that. Wanted to ask you, Catherine, did you change this year? Did you leave the exams, like the weights of the exams, the same, or did you make assessments different during the year or anything?
I think it was all back to normal this year, if I remember rightly. There were a few tweaks made last year. I think my main problem with online exams is because my first, particularly the first year module, is very technical, so it's very quantitative, and I have in my group I have colleagues who are even more quantitative, you know, within their various subjects, and some are just pure maths, as it were, and there's a limit to how you can ask context questions. You know, at some point you need them to do some maths, you need them to do some statistical calculations, and if they're doing them the right way, they'll all do them the same way, if you see what I mean. So it's very difficult to tell, you know, if they're colluding, if there's any, you know, any funny business, as it were, going on, because you would expect them to be writing those numbers in that order, and it's, you know, there's very little to go on. So I think that's perhaps one of the main issues with the quantitative end of things. And certainly when it comes to my sort of statistical exams, students have always, because these have always been open book, actually, even in the, you know, room, students tend to pattern match. So they kind of they look at your question, then they look through all their notes, and they look through all the past exam papers and the solutions, and they match, and then they write down something they think is you know, equivalent and appropriate, and therefore, you know, again, that makes it very difficult, because of course Turnitin comes in, you know, that everyone is writing the same thing, essentially. You know, that is a problem, I think, for maybe the quantitative rather than the qualitative. You try to, I mean, the idea is to try to design out the issues and to design in, you know, the true, you know, so you can truly figure out whether they're understanding it or not, the level of understanding, as it were, and knowledge. And yeah, that's been quite tricky. I wouldn't be say I was completely, well, not even close to being satisfied at this point. It's something, you know, we're working on, as it were. I'm still thinking actively about. So, of course, one of those ways was to give them data and get them to do something. So that's one thing you can do. I even went as far as saying, use your ID number to, you know, pick some random numbers, or generate some random numbers on your own, if they were able to do that, if I taught them to do that, and then use that in your analysis, you know, because then theoretically everyone's got a different answer, which of course has a knock-on effect on the marking, because if everyone's got a different answer, it's a pain to mark. So there were swings and roundabouts, let's say.
Yeah, no, definitely. I feel you for the quantitative thing. Like, I still have a lot of modeling and things, but I can ask them rather than write the model. I say, oh, can you use the model to explain this scenario? I did add a lot of, we had less group works this year. So in general, like we had only one of my courses have group work, but most of them were like 80% final exam or 70% final exam. So I managed this year to bring them, I think almost all of them, down to 50% final exam. So kind of they have a lot of assessments and things to do within the term, just to keep them engaged and give them, like, you know, I was very scared, because having such a large classroom, at least this is, you know, how do you know whether the students are coming? I know perhaps sometimes the lecture theater make us feel that the students are there, therefore they are following, which actually is not true. Mm-hmm. But I said, well, what if it just don't even see the students anymore. And so I think that was also quite good. I find it quite entertaining, well, entertaining, time consuming as well, but coming up with new ways. Okay, how do I assess the students without, like, not the usual tests or the things, but trying just to maintain them engaged in the course? And yeah, so I came up with, like, engagement activities, as I call them, and they end up being quite fun, because students sometimes, especially in money and banking, they end up doing videos, podcasts or articles for newspapers just on the topics, just to kind of, you know, in small groups. And again, as kind of some of these things, I say, oh, I never thought about this before. I'm actually quite happy with what students have done, so I might keep it even afterwards once, if we ever go back normal.
Yes, what will normal look like? Yeah, I mean, we're the same. We've done an awful lot of video producing, as it were, and online quizzes of different types. So yes, I don't see getting rid of that. We always have hourly. So an hour a week seminars for each student on any module. So that's, for me, that's more, usually more of an exercise. You know, they go through exercises with their tutor on the subject they should have been learning that week. So, I mean, that helps, because you're right. I mean, the lectures were huge. And of course, the bigger they are, they turn off the ability to even see them. You can't see them, and they can't talk to you, actually, over a certain amount. So, you know, my nearly 500 students, I could never hear them. And I did wonder what on earth that would be like. And it was weird, because you're talking to a black screen, basically. It's like talking to a brick wall. But then they started to talk to me on the chat, and that was great, because I knew someone was listening and they could ask questions and I could answer, and that was great. But of course, you're not hearing from all of them, and you know from the numbers that they're not all there, so you have to have faith that the ones that aren't is because perhaps there's a time difference, etc., and they're going to catch up later, but you don't know. So yes, from an exam point of view, we did lay on extra sort of revision sessions, as it were, than perhaps we would have done normally. I tried, not that I'm not always available, because I was, you know, I always have office hours, or actually just sort of drop in, you know, office times, etc. But actually, no, hardly anyone ever drops in. You know, in the old days, when I'm physically sitting there, I am usually very, very lonely. No one ever dropped in, hardly ever. But this time, because, you know, perhaps it was less scary, and also didn't have to physically go anywhere, more people dropped in. So the revision sessions were far more used. A lot of them just dropped in to check they weren't going to miss anything. You know, they didn't have a question themselves. They were just lurking in the background, as it were, listening to everybody else. And they were quite open with that, you know, they said that's what they were there for, and that's absolutely fine. And a lot of them did come with questions. So it was quite interactive from that point of view. And I'm hoping that they found it useful from a revision point of view. It's always problematic with revision sessions as to when to place them for a start, because, you know, they have their own timetable as to when they're going to get to your revision, depending on where your exam is, as it were, in their timetable. And it quite often is quite late on, actually. And we lay on the revision quite early. So usually it doesn't, you know, they're just not ready for it, as it were. But this time, I guess we had more leeway for a start, just from a practical point of view, because it was not in a physical room, and not having to be, you know, at any set time, as it were. And you could have more than one. And plus, we through our MyWBS system, we don't use Moodle, we use our own system. I could schedule my online, you know, office hours attached to any module I wanted at any time. I just, you know, put my own classroom up basically at any time, and it would go into their calendars. So, you know, that I could be very interactive. I could say at the end of a revision session, well, do you want something more? Do you want to do this again next week, you know, how are your timetables, you know, and we could have come up with something that worked. And, you know, I've never been able to do that before. So it was a lot more, I was a lot more able to be interactive with the students and I think more helpful to them from a timing point of view. I don't know how you found, you know, working with Moodle and online sort of revision sessions.
It's always this mixed feelings as well, because as you say, during the lectures in a way it was like, well, we did it through Teams and especially for the very large ones, you have like this live session, so you don't even hear the students or anything. You have to keep an eye on the slides or whatever you're presenting. You have to, of course, be focused on what you are trying to say and have an eye on the chat. So I remember the time when I was presenting and at some point I said, oh, let me see what is in the chat. Let's have a look. And in the chat there was, we can't see the slides. We can't see the slides. We can't see the slides. Going on for like 15 minutes. I said, oh, okay. So you haven't really followed the last 15 minutes of the lecture. Okay, let's go again. So that part, but on the other hand, like I do get many more questions that I usually get in a normal lecture, because a lot of students are, it's almost a thing to going through all the questions that are in the chat and trying to say, okay, I'm going to answer these. I don't have time for these ones. So that I think it's just how to make it interactive completely changed. So for instance, in those, there were moments I said, you know what, I'm going to give you the time to write the questions, but don't write questions in the chat because they are distracting for me. And so I need to create the space. Okay, now write questions in the chat. And so mm-hmm. I will like wait for them to write the questions. I will read the question and then I'm going to continue with the lecture. So how to create this new interaction was interesting. It was a bit shocking at the beginning, but eventually got used to. And they wouldn't talk because you said, especially in those classrooms where you could just unmute yourself and talk. I said, do you want to ask a question live? No one wanted to. Do you want to answer the question in the chat? To post your question in the chat. Yes, everybody will post the questions in the chat. That was, and the best thing that Teams did towards the end of our teaching was introduce the reactions, because even when you said, okay, can someone say whether this is clear? No one would say anything. Or can someone say, I need to repeat this? No one could say anything. So when the reactions were introduced, I say, okay, so people put the thumbs up if it's clear, or put the laughing face if you want me to repeat, or make the clapping if you want something else. And so at least, and I got a lot of reactions. I said, oh gosh, this is like, that's how we have to work. Not even the chat anymore. Just no. Reaction.
But then that's very much, you know, how people talk these days, you know, on their phones with little emojis and everything, you know, that's part of the language, isn't it?
Stefania and Katie continue their conversation in part two, where they talk some more about exams, celebrate all things Teams, and think about what next. You can find this episode alongside all our episodes discussing blended and online learning at the University of Warwick. But until then, thank you for taking the time to listen to this Listening at Warwick podcast, and we will see you next time.